Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to the show. Welcome to another Wednesday afternoon, another episode of Action Movie Anatomy, where we are covering one of the 90s children's action movie classics, The Men in Black. This is going to be a great episode, guys. I think this is like episode 82 or 83. Ha-ha! We'll see you in a second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
Boom! Oh, man.
I'm so glad you're doing the...
I want to just roll the song because I think I know all the words still. Do you know all the words still?
I don't remember the words.
I think I do. Okay, ready for this?
I'm ready.
Here we go. The good guys dress in black, remember that, just in case we have a face-to-face and make contact. MIB, move what you think you saw, you did not see.
All right,
we can cut.
That was good. This is,
Are you impressed?
Are you impressed or are you embarrassed for us? That is the real question.
Welcome to the show, guys. Welcome to the show. We are sitting here with sunglasses on that are not the Ray-Ban Predator 2.
No, mine are Ray-Ban, but they're not Predator 2.
And mine are prop sunglasses that I got for Halloween.
And I'm not wearing a black jacket.
Yeah.
Because of my damn dry cleaners. I went in there and I really tried to keep my cool, and I did. And you know me. I can get pretty heated when I'm upset.
Right. You can.
And I played it very cool and calm. I did yell an obscenity as I got in my car, which I wonder if they heard or not. Because I was just like, fuck. All white on camera is never good. It's Men in Black. We got everything. I was just bummed out. But I'm so excited to be talking about this movie this week.
You're Korean?
I am Korean.
The dry cleaners you go to are also Korean.
Absolutely.
Did you yell a racial obscenity that only could be understood between you and another Korean?
I honestly think that if they weren't Korean, I probably would have gotten upset. Like, more upset and said something.
Yeah.
But I just saw so many people. I mean, this sounds... I mean, I'm Korean, so I can say it. But so many people that were good friends of my mom. My mom is a real estate broker growing up in Oregon, so she sold dry cleaners a lot.
Yeah.
And they're all Koreans that own them in Oregon.
Yeah.
So I had this moment of just like... I know you. I understand this isn't your fault, and I'm just going to walk out. And
that's good.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear you kept your cool.
I played it cool.
Yeah.
Played it cool.
Are we ready to get jiggy with it?
We are ready to get jiggy with it.
Guys, welcome to the show. Welcome to Action Movie Anatomy on the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies and all things movie-related. This is episode, like, 82 or 81, somewhere right in that range, of Action Movie Anatomy, the show where we talk action movies. Is Men in Black an action movie? I mean, it sort of is.
It is. You know, I was a little reluctant, because when we put things up to polls, it's not necessarily that... Sometimes you wonder if the audience knows what they want or not.
Mm.
And Enemy of the State feels like more of our type of movie.
Yeah.
But after watching this yesterday, you and I had a moment in the very beginning of like pausing it and being like, wait a minute.
Yep.
Is this the right choice?
Right.
And based off of already doing a good amount of work, we were like, all right, let's just stick to it for a little bit. And about 10 minutes later, you and I were both like, I'm in. Yeah.
It's got good moments. You know, it's one thing we should actually just point out, because a lot of you guys who are listening or watching, maybe for the first time, the 50th time, what have you, you don't really know our process for picking movies, you know?
Yeah, it's weird. It's changed.
Yeah, it's changed. What happens is, as the same as this week, sometimes we'll forget to decide what the next week's film is. We haven't decided.
We completely haven't decided. We didn't even talk about it yet, which we usually at least talk about it.
Last week was the same thing. And so what'll happen is we'll look at sort of what's relevant, what's coming out. Who's in
actually, last week wasn't the same thing. I keep pitching heat.
Yeah.
And you keep telling me that we have a guest in store for it. It's a great guest that it may or may not happen.
Yeah.
But I just forget every single time.
So what ends up happening, guys, is we'll often put things up to poll. So it's not really so much that we'll say like, oh, this is one of the 100 movies, the 200 movies that we need to do. It's just, you know, we pick things that we liked watching that have enough action, that have actors we like.
Yeah.
So in this case, you know, Men in Black was a big movie. It was a benchmark movie in the late 90s for Will Smith's career. It's a movie that we were of the right age. We were 9 years old when this movie came out. Yeah. I mean, I must have seen this movie in theaters 2 or 3 times, then on video another 3 or 4. It, you know, it's very much something that was close to our hearts. So that's why we're doing this movie. We have made the mistake in the past of doing movies that we're not as excited about.
And yeah.
it doesn't happen very often, but sometimes we'll sort of happen upon one where we'll think it's a good idea and we'll be kind of wrong about it. And
well, the one thing that's a little different about those films is that you and I were excited about them, and then we watched them and then got unexcited. Whereas with this one, you and I were kind of... on the fence about, and then watched them, we were like, okay, this is good.
Well, yeah, I mean, the best example recently I can think of, and I think the worst movie we've ever done on the show, is Independence Day 2.
I totally forgot we even did it. I was just going to say Independence Day.
We had to do Independence Day 2 on the show because of the significance of Independence Day, the franchise to our show.
Bill Pullman.
Yeah, and we did it, and that was one of the least pleasing experiences in a movie theater I've had. I mean, that was a really bad movie.
It was a really, really bad movie, and it also just felt like a disservice to our show and to our audience.
Yeah, definitely. So it's hard sometimes, guys, and occasionally it'll happen. In this case, luckily, Men in Black is not a bad movie. Black is an awesome movie.
It's super awesome.
And it's very nostalgic, and there's a lot of things about this movie that are a lot of fun to talk about, and we're going to get into all of them. So we should point out that there are four action movie rules we try to adhere to with the movies we choose on this show. Rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. Once again, Will Smith, 90s Will Smith, definitely a guy that plays by his own rules.
And also, this is another one of those situations, kind of like in The Rock, where we have a superhero broken into two entities.
Right, yeah,
and
two
they
halves.
Balance each other out perfectly. The second rule is that the hero and the villain are always the smartest people in the room.
Beings, aliens, what have you.
I think so. I think that Vincent D'Onofrio's character is definitely the smartest bad guy in the room.
Yeah, TLJ is the smartest. He's the smartest on our side.
Yeah.
On the good side of things.
Exactly.
Because the good guys dress in black. Remember that, just in case you ever face-to-face make contact. Three, the movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure. They're sort of like a police. They're a secret police.
Yeah, I mean, they're...
Division 6.
Yeah, it'd be just like if they were, like, NSA or DOD.
Yeah.
But they don't work with the government.
Right, right.
So it kind of breaks the rule a little bit, but in a weird way. Because they are government. Yeah, anyway.
Movie contains a minimum of one explosion. Definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah, there's at least a couple.
So again, we find that it matches our rules perfectly.
Yeah, it fits. It absolutely fits. And we'll get a little bit more into this after we watch the trailer here, but this is definitely a benchmark movie for Will Smith.
Yes.
You know, when you're talking about actors who are on his level, there's only a few. There's a few people that have ever achieved, just in terms of genre appeal, sort of cross-culture worldwide appeal, financial, box office, and awards consideration. There's only a few guys that have ever done it. And he's, like, right at the top. And if you really look at that 90s catalog that sort of, like, catapulted him into the category, I think this is the most important movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think this movie brings to question all the questions that people ask about Will Smith. Is he overrated? Is he underrated? Is this the greatest movie he ever did? Is the best franchise he was ever a part of? Is this what made Will Smith what he is today? Should he have not done this? There's all these questions that come from Men in Black because this is the most successful buddy cop comedy ever made.
Yeah.
Like buddy comedy action movie. That being said...
Yeah, we will approach all of those questions through different parts of the episode. We have a great question of the day that inspired us to play a game that we sometimes play on the show, submitted by Josh Ryan Sports. So if you're listening or watching, we're going to bring to mind your question later in the show. Stick around for that. Thank you guys so much for actually submitting all of your questions and thoughts. You've been fantastic recently with the AMA question. It's been a lot of fun. We've been sharing a lot of different people's opinions. So if you do want to follow along with your thoughts in today's episode, future episodes, submit questions for later episodes, follow along. You can get the podcast at AMA Podcast on Twitter. You can find me personally at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
And you guys can find me at Andrew Guy on Twitter and Instagram as well. And today my phone is dying, so I don't have the live chat open. So if you do want us to read your comments or anything like that, send them to the podcast, please, on Twitter.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, Marissa, after we show the trailer, is it possible that we could blow up the live chat and put
absolutely.
That up on the screen? Thank you. That's Marissa Serafini up in the booth, producer and engineer today. How are you, Marissa?
I'm great. I love this movie, and I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about it.
Excellent.
Good things.
Let's cue the trailer.
Good trailer?
Ha-ha!
Ha-ha!
Yet unofficial government agency.
We'll take it from here.
Who the hell are you?
INS Division 6.
There is no Division 6.
Our mission is to monitor extraterrestrial activity on Earth.
25 gallons of blue goo they blew up for that.
I saw that.
I was pretty impressed by the effects and the CG and all that.
I want to get some coffee.
That wasn't in the movie.
No, thank you. I'm fine.
Yes, the CGI for 97 is solid. Yeah. Spielberg makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. I am in.
From now on, you will have no identifying
marks. So crazy. You just put one name behind something and you know it's going to be credible.
Part of the system.
Yeah.
We are the Men in Black.
You know what the difference is between you and me?
Haha!
I make this look good.
Series 4 deatomizer.
That's what I'm talking about.
Noisy cricket.
I feel like I'm gonna break this damn thing.
Oh, it gets better.
I have so many different B-sides.
Yeah.
Unlimited technology from the whole universe, and we cruise around in a Ford POS.
It's like an okay trailer.
See, now we got to work on your people skills.
It was, it took advantage of all the things you loved about Will Smith without it being too heavy-handed.
Yeah, definitely. Present.
I knew it. This is an alien, and you guys are from some government agency trying to keep it under wraps.
No.
Tommy Lee Jones.
I'm gonna count to three.
They bill him first in the trailer. One. Interesting.
Yeah.
That man does not look stable.
Two. He's always crazy. Why don't you get a massage or take a cream?
So before this, all Will Smith had really done was like Six Degrees and, you know,
Independence Day and Bad Boys.
But he was still like, I mean, you know what that's like when you're that young guy.
Totally.
In a new film from the director of The Addams Family and Get Shorty.
It was almost like TLJ made Will Smith more credible.
Yeah, our thesis conversation is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to change mine.
Okay.
Protecting because the Earth from the scum of the universe.
Based off the question that Josh has.
No idea whatsoever.
Got it, yeah. It's a good point.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys, that's the trailer for Men in Black. It's a pretty solid trailer. You know, if I was a fan of all properties involved and I saw that in 1997... 96.
Or if you were, 97, 96, 10 years old.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I'm fairly positive that I saw this multiple times in theaters.
I saw it a couple times, and it was one of my favorite movies growing up.
Yeah, it was that movie. It was like, it. All the reasons that Will Smith was huge in the 90s, you know, we love this movie for. So, what I'm going to jump in here, guys, with is thesis statement. And thesis statement is your big, bold thought about the movie. It's something that you would sort of share at a party. Maybe you got into a conversation with somebody who you felt like could really hang with you and talk movies. And the movie comes up, and you have this one thought you want to share. And, you know, my thought about this movie, it's a continuation of the conversation we were having before the trailer just rolled. And that's that if you look at Will Smith's career in the 90s, the three movies to pay attention to in his rise to stardom are Bad Boys 95, which is a surprise hit. He's on Fresh Prince at that point. That's a total surprise hit. Like, that, nobody knew if Bad Boys was going to be a movie that was good or if Will Smith could be a starring role in a big action movie.
Right.
That movie made a lot of money.
It was really more so, even though you didn't really think so, Martin Lawrence was kind of the bigger star at the time in a weird way, even though Fresh Prince was really peaking at that point.
Yeah.
Martin Lawrence was getting his own movies like Blue Streak and stuff already.
Yeah. So, the next year...
First DVD I ever owned.
I love Blue Streak. The next year, 96, is Independence Day. Mm-hmm. And in Independence Day, that's the first time the studio was like, we're going to put Will Smith in a position to succeed with this PG-13, big budget, alien film. This is going to be a hit, we think. We think based on the fact that Fresh Prince and Bad Boys, this will be big. This is his first chance to really be that guy.
And what, Jurassic Park was 95?
93,
right.
So Goldblum, you know, Goldblum's name is really big there. You have a big director who had done Stargate. You have Randy Quaid. You have all these different factors that are making Independence Day probably going to be a hit. Bill Pullman. And the movie
budget
was
itself.
Massive. The movie was really big. It made a lot of money. So what happened with Men in Black was, okay, let's combine the children's appeal and let's combine the sci-fi action appeal and let's see if we put Will Smith in this movie, can we make this a hit? And it was a huge hit. So in the context of Will Smith's 90s career and really the thing that built his star, this is the most relevant movie for multiple reasons. For the fact that it spawned a franchise, for the fact that it was marketable to children.
And adults, the same.
Yep. Yeah, this is the movie. So what's fascinating about that, though, is that Will Smith, as we stated on our Independence Day episode, is not very pleasing to watch by today's standards. His performances have aged badly. And not even like he does a bad job with them. It was just something about the tone, that era, what was asked of him, what we wanted as a culture out of that guy. And what's amazing is if you go look at Will Smith's adjusted box office receipts domestically, his top two movies are Independence Day and Men in Black. Mm-hmm. So my thesis is that if you were a new viewer and you were to go look at Will Smith and say, okay, I'm going to watch his two biggest movies, you would think he was an awful actor. Will Smith's 90s career, by today's standards, is totally irrelevant in terms of content.
Absolutely.
And that's my thesis. Will Smith's 90s career, in terms of content, is totally irrelevant by today's standards as a movie fan. It's aged so poorly. You look at the continuation after this film, 1998 is Enemy of the State, which is a slightly above average Tony Scott movie, not even one of his seven best movies.
It lost the poll to Men in Black to you guys.
Wild Wild West, which is a total flop.
It's a joke.
Right, and
it's
that's
a complete joke.
Pretty much it. I mean, Six Degrees of Separation people will reference sometimes as that movie where he's like dramatically credible. He does something different.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's 1993. He's not really a star in that movie. That's
Totally. No, it wasn't French. Until he did Ali that you were like...
And that's 01. So exactly. It's a totally different era.
Every single leading actor must go through different phases of their career, and Will Smith's are so... They're so weird, because like in the 90s, like we talk about, like this is who he was in the 90s, and in the early 2000s, he was like gunning for an Oscar. Anyway, we'll get into that with character profiles. My thesis statement, which I really like yours, and mine... I have so many, and my original one I'm going to toss out the window because I'm going to cover it with Josh. Josh's question.
We can actually just front porch that right now.
Should we just do it right now?
No, we can advertise it though.
Yeah.
The Josh Ryan question is:
yep.
Is Will Smith's role in this film career defining? So we're going to have that conversation later. Mm-hmm. Will Smith career defining role? Does he have a career defining role? Is it this character in this franchise? We're going to discuss that later in the episode. Back to your thesis.
So I think what I'm going to go to and say, despite this being Will Smith's greatest moment in the sense of him being the most palatable over decades and at the time, is that Will Smith is the most overrated actor of the 90s and 2000s.
The most
overrated actor of the 90s and 2000s. And I think that without having to say anything else, I can go back and piggyback off of your statement saying that everything he's done is aged poorly, which is true. You go back and you watch performances from the 60s, 70s, 80s of great actors.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking the McQueens, the Daniel Day-Lewis's, guys that have been, the Tommy Lee Jones, it doesn't matter. Guys that are great actors for the last 30, 40, 50 years, they don't age poorly. Their performances do not age poorly. Whereas Will Smith, and if you look at this guy's box office numbers, he is one of the most successful actors.
Ever.
Every movie he did for about 10 years grossed over $100 million. He was paid over $20 million for each one. He's overrated. He's not a good actor. I'm sorry. Concussion? Tell the truth. Like, no.
Don't like him.
No one likes it. No, everyone's tired of it.
See, I would actually jump in, and I think I would argue with you a little bit on the last statement that he's not a good actor. Because... And
that's fair, because I know Will Smith can be good.
Yeah.
I've seen him be good. Pursuit of Happiness is a good movie.
It's a good movie. He's really solid in that movie. Like, he has performances and he has moments where I buy in and I'm like... Because obviously, on the one hand, movie star charisma, he's got everything.
Absolutely.
He's as good as it gets.
And in the 90s, he was perfect. Loved Will Smith in the 90s.
Yeah. We're harsh on the guy because the effect that his movies had on us as kids, when you go back and revisit
them for a show
like this.
It almost feels like you've been betrayed.
Yeah, a little bit.
It really does. You go back and you watch a film like Independence Day, a film that you and I held to this incredibly high standard.
Like, we're talking, guys, when we made the list of the 10 movies on the show originally, like, we're going to base the theme of the show off of, like, the 10 movies in the middle category. Independence Day was one of the top.
It was like five, I think. Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, Terminator, Independence Day, The Rock. Like, it was in there with Speed and all those movies. And when we watched it, it felt like I'd been betrayed.
It's the only show we've ever done, ever, on this show in 81 episodes... that has more dislikes on YouTube than likes, because we tore the movie apart.
Absolutely, and we deserve it. We deserve it. If we're going to do a show that's about building up and getting you stoked for a movie that we love, and we cover one and we don't like it, that's our fault, and we understand that. Again, though, I'm going to say it, I do think he is the most overrated actor. I don't think that the films he does are bad. I think that this is his best moment, because TLJ balances him out perfectly.
Yeah, it's funny, because Independence Day would be... If I was going to go off memory, like, of the 90s, I would have said Independence Day is the most... It's the most relevant movie in the 90s if you were going to just look at the whole career and be like, okay, like, what's the best, sort of, the best? And even though I think it's bad. But this, at the time, was more important. Because this was the next step, and this was such a success. So those are the two thoughts, guys. If you have different thoughts, you want to share them with us... Sorry. I just choked.
He's dying.
On my discontent.
I've poisoned him.
Share your thoughts with us at AMA Podcast. Share your thoughts in the YouTube comments. Marissa, what do you have to say about all these
what do you
intense
think about,
thoughts? We're having just a full-on debate right now.
I think Will Smith is a very solid actor. He's shown his talent in different genres. And you guys
True.
Are a big fan of action, and obviously left such an impact on you when you're younger. And you kind of want that as you're older, and it doesn't really translate well in today's society and how popular culture has, you know, evolved since, which is really upsetting. But if you just take him as a dramatic actor, I think he's pretty solid. So if you isolate his career based on genre, I think you can enjoy him on certain roles and dislike him on others.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think there's a lot of moments in Ali that are really solid. Pursuit of Happiness is very good. I Am Legend is a little unbalanced, but it has some great moments. He supports a lot of that movie by himself, which is cool.
Which is, it's a lot to do.
You know, Hancock, he tried to choose a character that was a little bit more morally ambiguous.
It's so difficult, because I'm sitting here and I'm like thinking about my point, and and Marissa's and yours. Excuse me. And it's not that he's a bad actor. No. I think he's overrated. Does that make sense?
Completely.
Right?
You know, you're dead on, because and that part of it I can agree with you. I mean, because I don't disagree with him being overrated. I think you're dead on there.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. It's the concept that he's
not. Did I ever say he was a bad actor? I did.
You did. Yeah, I did. That's what I disputed.
Oh. He's not a good actor. He's definitely not a bad actor, though.
Okay. We're going to move on.
No. Please continue.
No. All I was trying to say was that he is entertaining, enjoyable, and does a good job in a lot of films he's in. He's definitely overrated because he's in the company of giants. Yeah. He's in the company of, like I said, we talk about Tom Cruise a lot on the show, but I mean, it's Will Smith and Tom Cruise as equals in terms of like worldwide box office appeal in a lot of ways. Like,
totally. And you talk about like black actors in general. Who are the two biggest black actors of the last 20 years?
Yeah, it's Denzel and Will Smith.
It's not even a question.
And in terms of box office receipts,
Will Smith.
It's not even a fair fight. Yeah.
No.
Will Smith like quintuples Denzel.
Yeah, it's insane. That's a real word, by the way.
Yeah, it's like it's actually he's got like 20% as many box office receipts as Will Smith. It's
a real thing.
Absurd. So anyway, we're going to move on to the next section of the show, guys. This is called Fist Pump Moment. If you watch the show a lot, you know this. It's that moment when you're watching a movie, something happens, and you're just like, this is fucking awesome. Yes, this is so good. I get to watch the rest of this. You want to call your buddy and get him on the phone and say, hey, you know what? I know you haven't seen Men in Black in a while, but go flip this on because you're going to lose it. You're going to just think this is amazing, and I just want you to do it. So what's that moment for you? It can be anything. It can be the song. It can be a headshot. It can be a certain line. Anything at all. And this movie, because it's a children's movie, it was hard. I found it difficult. I didn't have a lot of moments while I was watching this where I was like,
it's a different type of fist pump.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All the lines that are set up, I make this look good. No, you know, like, no, okay, you want, like, all the stuff that Will Smith did when we were kids that were funny.
Sugar in water.
Yeah, that stuff's all really difficult. I didn't find that I was fist pumping.
I had to lie about mine a little. Like, not in the sense of, like, lie is not the right word. I had to encourage my moment.
Right.
Like, it happened, and I was kind of like, is that a... Yeah, that's a fist pump.
Yeah, you know, I think my two... And this will happen sometimes. This is like when Busey is introduced in Under Siege, and that was just my fist bump, just Busey. Why do you tolerate that clown?
Get a lot of teeth, sure.
Yeah. Both the intro of Tommy Lee Jones when he first walks in the scene is great.
Yep.
That's great because he's awesome, and he's totally the best part of this movie.
He is definitely, like, it definitely goes Tommy Lee, Vincent, and then Will Smith.
Yeah. And Tommy Lee Jones is just, like, he's peaking in this moment of his career. He's, like, he's had this great, just, like, he's so fucking, like, macho meets, like, sort of sarcastic.
It's weird because he was kind of like, you know how George Clooney is definitely the smartest guy in the room?
Yeah, for sure.
It's like, Tommy Lee Jones is the smartest guy in the room in such a different way.
Yeah, but completely. Like, he's, you know, Gerard in The Fugitive.
Exactly.
Is, like, the definitive Tommy Lee Jones smartest guy in the room role.
Yes.
And this is just kind of a continuation. This is, like, taking that role, except, like, he's a little bit more campy.
It's just him from The Fugitive and then Will Smith from Bad Boys.
Yeah, right. And so I think in that sense, TLJ is my fist pump just when he first enters the screen. Division 6, we'll take it from here.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like, yeah, he's great. I'm in.
I love it.
The other one, though, is the same thing, but for D'Onofrio. And not when he's yelling and being an abusive husband.
Right, because when that happened, you and I were both kind of like, ew, that's ugly now.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound
it's
as
just not funny.
Funny as it was back then.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And no, it's just when he walks back in the house, and the wife's like, your skin's hanging off your bones.
Your skin's hanging off your bones.
You know what's funny about that, though? So when I was reading all the trivia and everything today, his name's Edgar, right?
Yeah.
You knew this.
Yes.
Since I've been a little kid, because he's an alien, I don't know why, I always thought his name was Egger.
Egger.
E-G-G-E-R in my
Egger,
mind.
Your skin's hanging off your bones.
Who the fuck is named Egger? Or, like, maybe at one point I was like, maybe his name is Eggert, like E-G-G-A-R-T.
Like, no way it's Edgar.
Maybe it's, like, a regional name that I don't know. Eggert or something, because that's the way she says it.
Yeah.
His name's Edgar, though.
She's great.
She's really good.
She's actually, like, fantastic.
That line, Edgar, your skin's hanging off your bones, is maybe the best line in the movie.
I feel like if you meet anyone our age and you say that, they'll laugh.
Yeah, right.
They'll immediately know what you're talking about.
Dead on. Sugar and water.
Our buddy Alex, yeah, sugar and water.
I laughed out loud, actually, when that whole sequence with the sugar was happening. It was one of the, that was, I think, the moment when I was like, yeah, I'm back in.
It's because it's awesome. It's because D'Onofrio, like, and D'Onofrio's commitment to the character, we'll get into that later with production development, is like the dude took it really, really seriously.
He's such a good actor.
He's an amazing actor.
Unbelievable.
Like, and I've just grown to appreciate him more over the last couple years.
Yeah. I think actually, to be honest with you, Kingpin and Daredevil was a big, big role for him.
Yeah, I mean, Vanessa. It was one of those things that it reminded you of who he was.
Yeah, like exactly, because he had been in all these movies over the years that we had seen as kids that we didn't really remember who he was. Like when you told me that he was Edgar?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Right. And then when I went and watched Salt and Sea, which is like one of those movies people always talk to us about, I was like, oh my God, D'Onofrio is amazing. He steals the show. Okay, so to get in my fist pump moment, Edgar getting introduced is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
The other one where I kind of had to like talk to myself about it was definitely the standoff between all three of them and the lady in the morgue.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
When he ends up grabbing her and jumps out the window.
Yeah.
It's the only time you see all of them on screen together. Like, yeah. It's the first time you see it, I mean. And it's like a sweet action movie moment. You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the lines, you know, you ever pull the wings off a fly?
Yeah.
You ever see a fly get even? Like,
that's
you're
a good line.
It's a great, that's my favorite line. And I'm saying it now because I have to, because it adds my fist pump. It's the only part of the movie that feels like a real action movie.
Yeah, and D'Onofrio is a very, very credible villain.
He is.
Yeah.
He's creepy.
He's creepy.
Weird, and he's ruthless.
Totally.
Yeah, I dig it. That is definitely my fist pump moment.
Yeah, excellent. Guys, if you want to share your fist pump moments with us and things that you like, I'm kind of blind.
I'm very blind.
Can't see.
Honestly, guys,
what's on the screen here.
As much as we'd love to, the live chat, we can't really read it from here.
Oh, here we go. That's a little better. You're still blind, though.
I'm still very blind.
There we go. Queen Latifah is a good actress. Interesting thoughts. Kingpin. Nor should they. They're comedies for general audience. Ice Cube plays the same character in every movie. Excellent.
But barbershop movies will never get nominated for Academy Awards. Is that what you said, Marissa?
I did.
That's good.
Pretty much everyone in the live chat, thank you for joining us. They're pretty much saying rappers turn actors. There are some that have been successful and some that
maybe we should switch it up.
And Tupac.
You want to do that instead?
Well, it's just interesting. So Ben and I had a couple segments that we were talking about today, and one of them was musicians turned actors, and the other one was the overrated, properly rated, underrated. Correct.
And there was the other, the list.
Oh, and the list.
Yeah, yeah. So the overrated, underrated, properly rated is a conversation we're going to have based on a question by Josh Ryan's.
Yes, so that's easy to stay in. Yes,
And you know, I mean, we can just have a quick conversation about musicians turned actors. We can do them all because, I mean, we'll just talk about it for a few minutes.
Yeah, we'll just do it quick. Well, without getting serious about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the early 2000s. So okay. Will Smith is kind of a weird one because he was an actor and a rapper at the same time. He wasn't like a guy who was known for having a lot of success as a musician who then turned into an actor. He was kind of doing both. And you even would see it, like when this movie came out, the song Men in Black came out with the movie, the same thing Wild Wild West 2 years later. He would do the music to support the films. And so it's different than the early 2000s, which is when the era of like rappers turned actors became a thing. Like 2000 to like 2006, 2008, you had like a huge number of all the DMXs and the Ja Rules and the TIs and like 50 Cent. Like you just had everybody being like, I'm an actor because I'm a rapper.
Because I'm famous and people watch me do things.
Yeah.
I think that rappers and musicians turned actors is one of the worst and greatest things to happen to the industry. And the reason I say this is exactly what you're talking about. I think that's one of the worst times ever.
Yeah.
I think that all those people jumping in. Look, acting is a beautiful craft that takes a lot of talent, skill, and dedication to get good at it. Just like music.
Yeah.
You don't see a bunch of actors and just jumping over and doing it. You see some of them, and some of them flop, and some of them are good. But it's one of those things where you got to pay respect to the craft. And I think that in order to be a great musician turned actor, your career has to be either changing or in a slump.
Yeah.
And my favorite musicians turned actor, David Bowie, doesn't really count because he's David Bowie. But you look at, like, even Beyonce back in Goldmember.
Yeah.
Like, that was when she was changing from Destiny's to Beyonce and, like, becoming Queen Beast.
Yeah.
She's way bigger now than she ever was then, and she could not be in a movie now. It wouldn't look good. Mark Wahlberg had to not be Marky Mark before he became a good actor. Will Smith was never a successful rapper before he became a successful actor.
Yeah.
I think the thing is that when you take these people that are either in a slump in their career or they're not quite here yet.
Yeah.
JT is one of the few exceptions, but you got to remember.
Yeah.
He was huge in NSYNC.
Yeah.
NSYNC died down and then he became an actor while he was becoming a one act singer. I think that if you are attacking acting at the peak of your height as a musician, it's taking advantage of your popularity and it's doing a disservice.
Well, because you also see what happens when, like, certain musicians will try it and swing and miss. Yeah. And it's a bad look. Rihanna and Battleship, you're like, what the hell were you guys thinking?
Nicki Minaj, even down to her commercial. I know she's been in a movie, but, like, that commercial, her Snapchat commercial, like, let's go. Like, it's really gross to watch.
Yeah, it's funny. Tom Brady's my favorite athlete of all time. All time. No question. Number one. Love Tom Brady.
I'm glad you're bringing this up.
Brady has acted in, like, several sketches. He's, like, been in a bunch of different digital shorts and things like that. Brady's a terrible actor. Like,
yes.
He's not a good actor.
Whereas Peyton, on the other hand...
Yeah, Peyton, like,
is a little more serviceable.
He, like, embraces his, like,
his bad
big dumb lugness or something. That's, like, his character.
Yeah.
Brady, it's, like, hard to put my finger on it. And, like, again, I will... In no way does this even affect my opinion of Brady by 1%.
I mean, there's people that Ben loved more than anyone in the world. It's Tom Brady, Tom Cruise, and Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, love Tom Brady. He's the greatest. but, like, yeah, you don't see Tom Brady starring in movies. If Tom Brady was starring in a movie, I'd be a lot more upset than him being in a digital short. It, like, some guys, some people just don't have the, like, the thing. And that 2000s era, man, when you had, you know, Ja Rule and DMX and all these guys showing up in movies, it was just like... And the weirdest thing is, like, okay, so 50 Cent tried to be in a bunch of movies.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to make a foray into real acting later on, like, real dramatic acting.
Yeah, he ended up, like, cutting all that weight
for the cancer
movie. Yeah.
And the really tough thing about that is that if you do it the wrong way, I've never taken 50 Cent seriously as an actor.
And you never will, and I never will
and
either.
It's nothing to do with his performance.
Or him as a person.
It's everything to do with his public perception and doing it the wrong way. And that's totally... Tom Brady's in Ted. He was great. That movie's great.
I love Tom Brady. Brett Favre. Yeah, but see, you guys are just listing athletes in movies. They're not leading those movies. They're
playing themselves.
They are cameos of themselves in a film. It's much different than being a lead in a film.
Yeah, definitely. So that'll be the quick conversation for today. We will save the conversation of best musicians turned actors for a later episode.
Absolutely.
That's definitely something we will do.
That's a fun one.
So let's continue down the list here. We've talked actually a bit about career profiles already, so we'll start with Will Smith. So something we noticed here in the trailer, and you guys heard us mention it, is that Tommy Lee Jones is billed ahead of Will Smith in that trailer.
Yes.
He's billed ahead of him. What's kind of fascinating about that is if you look at Tommy Lee Jones' movies directly before this, Volcano in 97, which is the counterpart to Dante's Peak, they came out at the same time, remember that?
I loved that.
Dante's Peak?
I love both of them.
Okay.
They're both not good, but
I never saw
both
Dante's
them.
Peak.
It's good.
But I remember in Volcano, there's that scene where the guy's, like, trying to save someone, and he, like, throws the person and
he
jumps.
Stands in the lava, like,
as his legs,
like, melting.
Melt into the lava. Yeah.
Dante's Peak is gnarly because in the beginning, it's, like, this couple, they go, like, skinny dipping in some, like, pond.
Yeah.
But then I think it ends up being, like, volcanic or something, and it burns them. There's, like, bodies in it and stuff. It's gnarly.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a good film.
Brosnan.
Yeah, it's acid water.
It's acid water?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Marissa.
There's so many 90s movies that I wish I had seen that I never saw, you know? Like, I wish that I had seen every crappy movie that was, like, a big-budget box office release.
Yeah.
It's all the reasons that people love The Edge when we, like, did The Edge on the show.
Oh, for sure.
There's just movies that come out. Like, the other night at home, I was, like, end of the night, and I was like, I got 40 minutes until this pizza shows up. I'll turn on Rising Sun. So I, like, started watching Rising Sun. Wesley Snipes,
oh,
Sean Connery.
Yeah.
It's like the like...
really good.
Yeah, kind of. It's like a Michael Crichton novel. Yeah. But it was like, I was just thinking about it. I was like, I've never watched Rising Sun. Bizarre. Carl Weathers was an athlete. Big shout out to Jason Smith, whose thesis statement on Rocky IV is that Carl Weathers is the greatest athlete turned actor of all time.
Which is pretty good, but it's tough to argue now with The Rock. It's tough.
Yeah, but I would still say that he was an NFL player. The Rock never made the pros.
It's true. Miami is not the pros.
But anyway, Volcano 97, Batman Forever 95 played Two-Face, and then a movie called Cobb in 94 that I've never seen.
Really quick with, like, volcanoes and things like that, and, like, tornadoes.
Yeah.
The 90s made you scared of shit that you never had to be scared about. And I think quicksand was the biggest one.
Quicksand.
You never saw quicksand in movies all the time? Like people dying in quicksand?
Oh, like the thing of quicksand.
Of quicksand.
I thought you meant a movie called Quicksand.
No, the thing of quicksand. And then the fact that, like, you're never going to encounter that ever. And, quicksand. Like, as a kid, you were like, yeah, oh, fuck, man, I don't want to go out in the woods. I'm stepping in
quicksand. There's quicksand everywhere.
Fucking
quicksand
and everywhere. Volcanoes and
hey,
tornadoes.
Take the 134 to work today. There's some epic quicksand on the 101.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's TLJ in the mid-90s there.
What's Cobb?
It's not a movie I don't know much about it.
Okay.
93 is The Fugitive, so he wins the Oscar in 93 for playing Samuel Gerard, one of our unranked hero-villain hybrids who's like the anti-hero, the classic anti-hero. Volcano is dumb, awesome, says Rangers fan 1996. Excellent. yeah, he was sort of peaking. He was in this great moment in his career. It's funny, too, because if you were to say to me, after this movie, can you give me, like, 5 Tommy Lee Jones movies between now, like then, and when he became like old TLJ,
like a respected,
like No Country TLJ, which is like he's like an old man at that point. And I can't think of almost anything in the early 2000s.
The only thing keeps popping in my head is Double Jeopardy, but I think that was still late 90s.
That's like 98. Yeah. It's like right around the same time, but that wasn't a hit. I mean, no. Like I'm just trying to think what I'm forgetting. He for a guy that was billed ahead of Will Smith in the trailer for this movie. In 1997, it's remarkable that his career over the next few years didn't just, like, what are we forgetting? I mean, maybe there's something big
there's gotta be something huge we're forgetting, because it was, like, U.S. Marshals.
Yeah, that's the next year. Then, it's 98, and that was a flop.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Right? It's so weird not having my phone. It being dead, I can't just pull it up.
Yeah. Marissa, would you mind doing us a quick favor and pulling up the... Oh, here you go. Quicksand Princess Buttercup. Yeah, I interviewed Cary Elwes, by the way, last Thursday from Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Wesley. Cool guy?
Yeah, really nice guy.
I'm sure.
He's a fun dude. Yeah. He, like, hijacked the interview at the end and plugged something that he was in, which was like... But my interview wasn't great anyway, so I was like, ah, I see what you're doing here.
Yeah, sure.
Can we just look at the IMDb profile for TLJ from, like, the late 90s? I just want to see what the next 5 years were.
While you're looking that up, I'm going to go through Will Smith's most recent credits real quick. He was in Six Degrees of Separation in 93, Bad Boys in 95, and Independence Day in 96, and that was also the same year that Fresh Prince wrapped. So Will Smith was literally riding this rocket ship to A-list stardom.
And it's funny, because this references back to my thesis, but this is really the phase of his career that he'll always be remembered by up until... that kind of second half that we were talking about. Because pretty much everything that happened after this movie is mostly irrelevant for the next 6 or 7 years. Like, Ali being the exception.
Right.
But Enemy of the State's not a movie that can... All right, let's see. Blow this up here.
Enemy of the State... Guys, what is your opinion on Enemy of the State?
The missing rules of engagement. Cowboys? Rules of engagement. I mean, talk about a guy whose career was like small soldiers. I mean, look at this. Men in Black... and Batman Forever, right? Those are two movies, like, you're the villain in a Batman movie, and you're in Men in Black. You won an Oscar in 93, Natural Born Killers. As you go forward, it's
Ty Cobb is the wet... Okay, all right, so let's go up here a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, literally... because then, again, in the Valley of Allah, Oscar nomination for No Country for Old Men.
Right.
I mean, these are all big movies.
Like, yeah, so let's go down just a hair back to where we were. Men in Black 2, Space Cowboys, The Hunted, The Missing, Man of the House, and Three Bear.
Wow.
Is Tommy Lee Jones the greatest, like, turnaround success story ever? Like, because talk about a guy that was so... Man of the House, I feel like is all I need to say. This guy was so incredibly well-respected, and then he did nothing relevant for almost a decade, and none of us cared.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. I mean, it's crazy to be... Because as we said, it's not like Independence Day wasn't huge. Independence Day is the highest grossing film domestically by box office adjustment that Will Smith has made. I mean, it's his biggest movie. So to follow that up with a trailer for this movie and have Tommy Lee Jones billed first in the trailer is unreal. I mean, that's like...
Was Will Smith billed first in ID? Or was Goldblum?
Oh, it can't be him.
Had to be Will Smith, right?
I mean... I feel like it'd be Jeff Goldblum, but we'd have to look that up. But I mean, what is fascinating, and I mean, it's probably adjusted now because it's so like he's such a bigger star now. But
that's true.
Just like looking at that is crazy when you compare it to Will Smith, where it's like the few years prior to this movie were just this huge skyrocket. And then like we said, it's basically Enemy of the State's kind of irrelevant. No one really likes that movie. Wild Wild West is a total flop.
But this was still, even though these are flops, these are still movies that it's like, Will Smith's number one in the world. I'm going to go see it.
Huge. Made a lot of money. Yeah, mm-hmm. right. In fact, you know, Marissa, we're going to do it later in box office. Can we throw up the graphic for box office? I gave you two box office graphics for this show.
Keeping you on your toes today,
yeah,
Marissa.
We're jumping all over the place. So the two graphics that I pulled, one was for adjusted box office, the other was for unadjusted worldwide. So the one I'd like to pull is for the adjusted domestic.
If I had a neuralizer, I would fuck with people so much.
I thought that the neuralizer was such a cruel tactic.
It's really gnarly. Like, I love that Will Smith is like, you can give her leukemia or something, man. Okay, all right.
So yeah, ID4 and Men in Black are the top two by adjusted domestic. So Suicide Squad, but that's not a Will Smith movie. He's just the top credit because of who he is. I Am Legend, 07, so we're talking about a decade ago, right? Which is kind of, that's like peak Will Smith, I can be in anything mode. Men in Black 2, which is unsurprising.
Same with Hancock. Hancock is the same Will Smith I can meet, and that movie made a shitload of money.
Hancock is probably the most surprising box office hit I can think of. Like, I know no one who ever references that movie as good. The only relevant statistic that I can think of that movie is that it's written by Vince Gilligan.
Yeah, exactly.
That's literally the only thing about it that's relevant.
It's a great little trivia fact.
But, I mean, if you look at this, it's like, those are both 90s. Suicide Squad last year. I Am Legend is the second part of his career. Men in Black 2 is a sequel. Hancock's the second part of his career.
You know what I want to say real quick, too, is also, guys, if you have a favorite actor, go to Box Office Mojo right now, type in their name, and go to their adjusted gross for their careers. These numbers are insane.
So here's
insane for domestic.
Here's what I'm blown away about. Enemy of the State is 1998, right? That's the next movie that he made after Men in Black.
Was that 300? What is that?
It's 300,000. Men in Black 2 is in the middle there. It's like, I think that maybe was in 02 is when that was released. Other than that, there's nothing between 1998 and 2004 in his top 10 adjusted domestic. Coming off of this run, the next 6 years don't have a single movie.
And he made movies. And he made movies in that time.
It's weird. It's like he had a... It's like the same as TLJ. It's like he had this... I mean, he's way bigger, but he was making all these movies. You know, I, Robot, all this shit that was coming out in the early 2000s. Like, Ali didn't make any money. It was kind of a flop. Like, no one really liked it. I think he might have gotten nominated for an Oscar for that movie.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that is insanity. The next 6 years of his career just don't chart. It's like Men in Black 2 is the only one.
I guess it's because once you've hit that level of stardom, you can just kind of do whatever you want.
Yeah, it's crazy to me that then he managed to pick back up in the mid-2000s and do what he did, which is like all those other movies. So that shit is crazy to me.
Fun trivia fact, Will Smith here admitted that prior to this film, he had not worn a suit since he graduated 8th grade.
I cannot believe that.
I can't. I'm sure you couldn't. Let's work our way into production development here. There's a lot of good stuff going on. I'm going to start with Sonnenfeld, just because it seems appropriate. Barry Sonnenfeld is the director of this film. He graduated from NYU Film School, and he got his start in the business by working in pornography.
I saw that, yeah.
I don't know exactly what he did in pornography, but that is what he was doing.
He's probably a fluffer.
Yeah.
That's how a lot of people start. It's like starting in the mailroom.
It's true. You got to start in the mailroom. You got to start in the porn room. Stallone did it. Yeah. He then got hired by the Coen brothers. That is not going to go on record. As the director of photography with the Coen brothers in Our Water, which was Oscar nominated. Then he went on to do Blood Simple, and this is like a partnership. They did three films in a row together, Blood Simple, Raising Arizona, Miller's Crossing. After that, Sonnenfeld decided, he was like, you know what? I'm going to do my own shit. I'm going to make my own movies. And that's actually why he was chosen for this film. The first film he ever directed on his own was The Addams Family in 91, which, as we all know, is like one of the biggest cult classics, you know, in our lifetime. Everyone loves the Addams Family.
Yeah.
Addams Family Values did not do very well. It was not a success. It made $43 million as opposed to the $113 that the first made, with like double the budget.
Surprising.
Yeah. The next thing he did was kind of like that thing of like, look, I'm not going to go away. He did Get Shorty, which got Travolta a Golden Globe.
Could we do Get Shorty on here? I don't think we could. It's not accurate.
I don't think we could, but I do love those movies. They're all like that whole like all those
Elmore
films
Leonard,
are so fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he did that. He got Travolta a Golden Globe, and then that led to Steven Spielberg asking him to direct Men in Black. Which fun little tidbit: when Spielberg called Will Smith, he didn't believe it was him.
Yeah,
to get the part. Which I guess I wouldn't believe it if someone said they were Steven Spielberg either. After that, Sonnenfeld has just gone on to do, you know, Wild Wild West, MIB 3, RV, Big Trouble. He's a big producer now, as well as like a part-time director. The only thing he's working on right now as a director is the new series of Unfortunate Events on Netflix.
Gotcha.
And he's producing that, which I think will be cool because I actually really enjoyed that Jim Carrey film.
Yeah.
And I think the books are cool.
Sonnenfeld's got a really nice style. It's, you know, I actually find all the direction stuff interesting, but the thing I find the most interesting is the stuff about being a cinematographer for the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
Blood Simple is their first movie. That's
yes.
actually the first film they ever made. And that's a, it's like a weird, small-time, dark, slow, like, murder mystery. It's pretty good. It's definitely a cool movie, not, like, good by their other standards. Raising Arizona is a cult classic. Great movie.
Love that movie.
Yeah, really fun. And then Miller's Crossing is great. Miller's Crossing
I don't know
is,
Miller's Crossing.
It's like a...
You know it. No.
Yeah, it's right around the same time. I think it's like a couple years before Barton Fink. It's like in the era of the Coen brothers where they were making these like kind of small-time, edgy, dark, funny, quirky movies, but they hadn't gotten Fargo yet. They hadn't had Lebowski yet. They weren't sort of at that like, oh yeah, these are like some of the best people in the whole world. And I want to say Miller's Crossing is like a mafia, like a crime family type of movie.
Which one?
Miller's Crossing.
Oh.
But it's beautifully shot.
I just watched Fargo for the again the other night, and God, that movie's so good.
Fargo's great. Yeah, definitely. So, anyway, I think that's really cool. So, Sonnenfeld, that's his story. The writers on this film, there's two guys credited. There are Ed Solomon and also Lowell Cunningham.
Yeah.
So, Lowell Cunningham is the comic book writer. Fun tidbit, Men in Black's based on a comic.
Yeah, I was so surprised you didn't know that. I didn't really know it either, but you know so much more about comics than I did. And what I thought was so cool is TLJ was like, look, I'll maybe do the film if you fix it.
Yeah, you rewrite the script.
Because this does not follow the comic.
Yeah, but here's what's like really interesting about that. It's kind of like, all right, so you're worried about the script not reflecting a comic book from an obscure Canadian comic book publisher that went out of business in 1994. Right. I wrote the name of it down. Like, I had legitimately never heard of them.
Is that why TLJ is such a badass?
I mean, maybe. That's like such a crazy thing to say. Like,
you got to remember back, guys, when 97, when this film came out, the internet wasn't just like a thing that you could just pull up your iPhone real quick and be like, look, this isn't like the comic. How did he know?
I don't know. So, I mean, I guess he maybe got the script and, like, looked it up. But, like, the publisher was Aircell Comics. So, reading about Aircell Comics, they were part of a late 90s branch of comic book publishers who all ended up merging together. I believe one was called Malibu Comics. And eventually, they got into porn comics. Because they got into, like, adult comics. Because, like, they went out of business. That's where they found success. The only other thing Lowell Cunningham ever did was that he wrote a bunch of Star Wars parody comics. But, I mean, this is a three-issue miniseries, the Men in Black comic. Like, it's not... This was not a long-running series that was around for a long time. This was obscure. This is not Marvel. This is not DC. This is not Image,
Dark Horse.
It's just,
like, real... It's like a one-off, almost.
This is, like, a very obscure publisher. Like, if you were looking at the top eight or nine publishers in the world, this is nowhere near. So this is just one of those things where someone came across it.
It was like, this is cool.
This is also before the era where comic book adaptations were, like, commonplace. It's you know, I read one thing that the success of this film was in a lot of ways responsible for the willingness that the studios had to take on X-Men and Spider-Man and do all these other movies. Because that's all right around the same time. 2000 is X-Men. This is 97.
Yeah, like, and Spider-Man.
Yeah, a lot of that 90s stuff, you know, it was not happening in the 90s. There was no faith. And all the properties being optioned happened later. So,
yeah, and this was never advertised as a comic book movie.
Yeah. Now, Ed Solomon, on the other hand, the other writer, the guy who wrote the screenplay.
Oh, yes.
Ed Solomon's a badass. Straight up. Like, he's... Solomon... So this is poorly printed.
It's because it's no black and white and
not
poorly
color. Printed. Marissa, you did a wonderful
job. Great job.
There's no ink in the printer. That's
so
what
we
happened.
Got Bill and Ted's bogus adventure here.
Yeah, so check this out. So the stat here that it says is he was the youngest writer at the time on the Gary Shandling show when he got his first job. But he has had critically acclaimed franchises in each of the past four decades, right, that he wrote. Starting with Bill and Ted, both films, right?
Men in Black.
Yeah, something that I can't read. Men in Black, Charlie's Angels, X-Men that he did an uncredited rerun on,
and then
Now You See Me. Which he's written, the first one, the second one, and there's a third one announced.
How is there a third movie coming out? Again, guys, Ben and I were on this movie trivia showdown, which we did not do well on. That's mostly my fault. But if you ever want to ask a great trivia question, always ask what live action sequel were Mark Ruffalo and Woody Harrelson in 2016? It's like, Now You See Me 2, and no one will ever guess it.
I mean, talk about a movie that was like, how on earth was there a sequel made? let alone a third movie announced.
It's
I mean,
a trilogy. There's going to be a Now You See Me trilogy.
I'm going to bet money. You haven't seen any of them, right?
I have not seen any of them. I never will.
I'm going to bet money that in the next several weeks, we're going to have the idea to sit down and watch the first movie together, and we're going to be like, this was pretty good. Let's watch the second one.
Well, that's the thing, is the first one I heard is actually pretty sweet.
Yeah. I'll bet you the second one's entertaining.
The first one's not bad. The second one is skippable.
Everyone. That's what I hear from everyone.
Got it.
Right
okay.
there.
Got it. But they're making a third one. They're so the second one must have made a bunch of money.
Yeah, taken. All right. So let's move into producers.
Yeah, basically. I mean, the producers on this one, we've talked about on various episodes before. I mean, Spielberg's the biggest one. It's kind of like talking about...
It's like talking about Air.
Yeah.
And like H2O and stuff. It's like, if you don't know Steven Spielberg, then come on now.
Yeah, I mean, he's... You know, worth, I think, $3 billion. He's made everything. Like,
he's arguably the greatest director-producer ever.
Yeah, I mean, Jurassic Park, E.T. It's like Spielberg, Cameron. Like, you have a couple guys like that where... I do think it's interesting that Spielberg, over the last decade, has definitely changed... His perception's changed. It's the whole idea of being relevant. Like, I think War Horse was one of his movies that he made semi-recently. Yep. Minority Report, he directed in 2004.
Did he do a new Tom Hanks movie? Didn't him and Tom Hanks do another movie recently?
Yes.
Bridge of Spies.
Bridge of Spies, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, that gets attention and nominations because it's a Spielberg movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But, like, when you talk about... You talk to, like, friends of ours
like
in the industry.
Like, rewatchability and, yeah.
You talk to our friends who, like, are writers and directors in the industry.
It's
and
a joke.
Like, yeah, they're like, I have no interest in watching that movie. Like, it just... It looks like trash. And I don't know if it was. I didn't watch Bridge of Spies. But, I mean, that's definitely a testament. I mean, it's... I saw the trailer for Dunkirk this morning.
Did you?
Just came out.
Is it sweet?
The full one, yeah. It's totally sweet.
Oh, shit. Yeah. We gotta wrap this. I gotta go watch it.
You know, Nolan is the biggest director in the world right now in terms of expectation. Like, dramatically, he's the biggest there is.
Yeah, it's so weird. Even though Iñárritu wins back-to-back director awards,
yeah.
He's not held to the same standard as Nolan. Like, half people don't even know how to say Iñárritu's name.
No, like, Iñárritu's incredible in his own way. But, you know, I actually had this funny thought this morning, and this is a tangent. This is a show full of tangents. But yes. I had a funny thought this morning where I was like, you know, if I was talking to some executive working on the Transformers franchise, they would probably say something to me like, well, we have the biggest director in the world. Like,
Michael Bay.
Right. And it would be based on box office success and all this. And, like, that's exactly the kind of way that you can, like, warp perception in terms of what is success or not.
Anyone. Yeah, for anyone.
But I would say, and you could say the same thing about James Cameron. You could say the same thing about Steven Spielberg, because you could come up with some metric that proved it in any way. But I really do think that in terms of, like, box office meets dramatic expectation, awards nominations, and also just being that guy who's, like, in it right now, he's, like... He's at the right age. He's ambitious. He's making all the movies that he wants to make. I think Nolan's the guy. I think right now Nolan is the guy. Like, he's making the biggest, the best.
And he's making his movies, the stories he wants to tell. It's not the same as these other guys. Like, Peter Jackson was an argument, you know, 10 years ago with all the Lord of the Rings movies. It's not the same. He didn't get to make his own movies. He made... It's like he was like the greatest cover band of all time.
Yeah, right.
You know, like things like that. James Cameron kind of peaked with his creativity with Titanic and Terminator.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, the Avatar movies would, if they were good going forward, would surprise
me. Right, like, again, Avatar is one of the most beautiful things you'll ever see in theaters, ever.
Ever.
It's not a good movie. No. All right, let's move on to critical box office reception here. This is produced by Sony and Columbia.
I do want to just add really quickly, because there was a couple notes here at the bottom of the producers. The other two major producers on this film
McDonald, yep.
are Walter F. Parks and his wife, Laurie McDonald?
Yeah.
Bonnie McDonald? Old McDonald Farm. Laurie McDonald, Walter F. Parks. They have been married since 1983. Massive, massive list of credits together. Like, they've been producing movies together since the mid-80s. He's been doing movies back into the 70s, I believe. And he worked on Gladiator,
Twister,
Black,
Twister.
Yeah. They did The Ring. They're attached to a new sequel to The Ring. The Barbie movie that they just told us that... Amy Schumer is going to play Barbie. Did you hear this?
Oh, yeah, I did hear that.
Yeah, they're involved in that. So Walter F. Parks and Laurie McDonald, those big, big people. It goes beyond Spielberg. So
yeah, that was my fault for skipping right over them.
It's all right.
So back to critical. Sony Columbia, this cost $90 million to make. It was a summer movie released in July of 97. It grossed $250 million domestically and $338 worldwide for a gross total of $589 million. In 1997, with an opening weekend of 51.
Unadjusted.
Unbelievable.
89.
It is the most successful buddy comedy action movie ever. It's the most successful sci-fi comedy ever. It is the most successful in the franchise, if you adjust it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I saw a film last Thursday called Sugar Mountain. A guy named Richie Gray was the director. He's an Australian director.
Mm.
Did the premiere for it. It's the one that Cary Elwes was the star of and had a bunch of big people in it. Like the kid, Drew Roy from Falling Skies, he's a star of that movie. Really, really interesting premiere and a lot of fun to meet everybody and talk to everybody. And actually, I did interview Josh Hellman. You guys, if you watch the show, then you know in Jack Reacher, when Cruz kicks that guy in the balls,
yes.
He's like, you're okay. You're okay. That guy, that's fucking Josh Hellman.
Josh Hellman.
He's in the X-Men movies. He's in Mad Max Fury Road. Really fun interview. The guy was a total trooper, great guy. If you look on Popcorn Talk on the YouTube channel, you can find those interviews. It's a funny interview. I think I say to him, one of the few people in history everybody kicked in the balls by Tom Cruise, and he gets a good laugh out of it.
Yeah, he's excited.
But in any case, that movie, Sugar Mountain, which I saw in theaters, solid movie. Not the greatest I've ever seen. I can see real, real talent out of the director, and I think that guy's going to have a great career. Looked incredible. Made for like $800,000. It was made for like 800 grand. Wow. I'm reading this stat here. After script rewrites, looking for a more action-oriented ending, the original animatronic bug was discarded after 8 months of development.
And we're talking about an animatronic bug that took, again, 8 months of development, a guy that this was like his baby. He'd done the animatronics for many films. He did the makeup for Two-Face.
Yeah. The new sequence using a redesigned bug contained 45 CG shots at a cost of $100,000 each.
Completely scrapping the animatronic bug.
According to the director, Barry Sonnenfeld, it was the best $4.5 million we ever spent. Now, it's the reason I bring those two things up is that it is astounding that a movie like this could have, you know, like, oh, yeah, we'll work on this thing. Just scrap it. Spend $4.5 mil to create this bug for these shots at the end. And this guy, Richie, makes this movie that I'm like, yeah, this is really enjoyable. And I had a drink with him after. We talked about movies. Like, he's an awesome dude. He spent 700 grand to make his movie. Like, that's independent movies versus studio movies, guys. It is unbelievable the difference. It's not even, it's literally like you're in a different league. You're not even competing for the same thing.
It is, exactly. And that's like why Looper I hold to such a high regard, is because it was so cheap to make. Moving on, this movie critically was received by IMDb with a 7.3, and it goes against our typical algorithm on Rotten Tomatoes with a 92 by top critic, or all critics, an 84 by top, and a 79 by the audience. Which makes sense, I guess. I think a big part of that is about Will Smith aging. I bet if you looked at this number 10 years ago, it was a lot different. 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah, people still like turning in reviews and things like that for it in the audience. Yeah, it was a harder experience to watch. You know, I thought the scene that was the hardest for me to watch was when they arrest the guy who has the pregnant squid wife.
Oh, yeah.
And Will Smith's in the background.
Yeah, it was just too much.
Beaten on the car with the tentacles.
Yeah.
That was one of those things where I was like, if I'm 8, that's great. I'm laughing out loud. I think this is fantastic. Like, I think this is just great.
Yep.
As a 28-year-old man,
you're just like, come on.
I'm just like, can this scene just change now? Because, like,
what is the point of this?
Yeah, and that was, like, a really interesting moment for me where I was like, wow, like, there's the whole idea of making, like, a Zootopia, Moana, like, these animated films where you're like, oh, they're adult movies for kids.
Right.
In our day and age today, that's like a really great thing to do. Like, you can do a great job with that. You can make an animated movie that's for both audiences. But this was one of those times where I was like, I can with a straight face say to people, Men in Black's a great kids movie. Like, this was a phenomenal kids movie in 97. Yeah. It's not a kids movie today. Like, maybe if your kid's 4 or 5 years old. If your kid's 12, this movie's not fun to watch.
No.
Like, we our nostalgia carries us through a lot of this movie, and our love for the actors involved carry us through, but it's that weird middle ground where, like, a great children's movie that ages poorly. Like, 92% is insane. Like, this is not a 92% movie.
No, it's incredibly high, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense for... It doesn't make sense. We've done 81 movies on this show. 92 is if you make movies your whole life and you get one that's 92%, that's an amazing accomplishment.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, definitely.
So moving on to favorite line, I've already said mine earlier, and that is, you ever pull the wings off a fly?
It's a good line, yeah.
You ever care to see a fly get even?
Yeah.
That's mine. What is yours?
This is one of those things where we talk a lot about on this show that the book was fantastic for that, talking about World War One, not decent. Just reading the chat here, guys, seeing if we're missing something crazy. Babe blowing shit up again.
Yeah, exactly.
All I need to see. I really like some of the lines Tommy Lee Jones has in this movie. I think he's got they insert in movies like this sometimes some real intelligent lines into a children's script or an action script. And a couple different times, I really like when Will Smith with the noisy cricket is shooting after Eggert. And and he's blowing, you know, shit up, and Tommy Lee Jones is like, you can't discharge your weapon. He's like, oh, we got it, this. And he's like, there's always an Arkelian battle cruiser or such and such and such. Always. The only way we make it work is that these people don't know about it.
Exactly.
And I really like that moment. I really like that line because
it's kinda, true.
Yeah. It's kind of, you know, what it's a great metaphor for, and I think the reason I liked it so much is that it's kind of like, all right, we live in America. We're privileged people. We have good lives. We get to do a lot of cool things and have a lot of good times. If we wanted to lend ourselves and our attention, our time, and our energy to every single social concern, and I'm not just talking in our country. I'm talking worldwide, right?
Yes.
Everything. I mean, everything from, you know, Dakota Pipeline to, you know, political campaigning for the candidate you think should win, to genocide happening in other countries, to a draft on the horizon for, you know, war that our president's going to start. Like, in my lifetime, there have been multiple dozens and dozens and dozens of these things where if you let yourself get sucked into it, you could become so concerned, so worried, you could devote your life to fighting for that cause. I mean, you could literally...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people do.
And in the same way, there's so much content out there being created and you cannot consume all of it. You can't commit yourself to every single thing in the world that you would like to help. And so that's where I thought this line really resonated with me, is like, there's always something on the horizon that's looming. There's always something to be concerned about. If you lose it and you make a scene and you do something uncharacteristic and you fuck up, essentially, you're not helping anything. You know, you can't help everything by just...
You can't. You just bring more stress to the world by just being worried about things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
That's a really cool line. I really like that. I like that and the you know, it's better to have loved than lost, never to have loved at all. You
That's
try
good.
It out sometime.
Yeah, and the know? Other one that I really like is when he's on the bench and he says, "Is it worth it?" Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're strong enough.
If you're strong enough.
That's the other line that I really liked. And those are real lines that really I like really had, you know, kind of a moment.
Tommy Lee Jones and Vincent D'Onofrio really ground this movie and make it a great film because of their commitment to their characters. You know, D'Onofrio watching hours and hours and hours of bug footage and watching them.
Yeah.
And like wearing knee braces and taping his ankles. Like, those two guys really make this film something great.
Yeah.
But let's move on here to the categories. I think this is a really interesting conversation. We have three categories on this show. You know, we got... Oh.
No. The categories will be next. We have one last thing to cover, and that's a question.
Oh, right.
From Josh Ryan Sports on Twitter. Our buddy Josh Ryan, at Josh Ryan Sports. Follow along. He provides actually a lot of great conversation.
Really
for the
good
show.
Conversation.
Really, really good questions. And the question here is career-defining role. We reworded your question a little bit, Josh, but it inspired us to play a game, which is overrated, underrated, properly rated. And we're going to do that with Will Smith, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. That's the wrong game. Career-defining role. That's what it is.
Yeah.
I mixed up my two games.
Whether or not Men in Black, his role as Jay, is a career-defining role, or is it one of his other roles? Is it him as Fresh Prince?
Does Will Smith have a career-defining role?
Yeah.
And would you have a first thought?
I do, and I think I don't think he does. I think that's really interesting to say for someone like this who's had such iconic roles, but I think that he's had so many iconic roles that there isn't a career-defining one anymore. I don't think there's one thing that you can say, Will Smith, you can be like, oh, no, he was the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. You're like, yeah, but he was also in Men in Black, and didn't you see Pursuit of Happiness, and haven't you seen X, Y, and Z? I think that you could have made that argument, let's see, what is it, 2016, maybe 15 years ago?
Yeah.
That this is the biggest movie, and this is a career-defining role, but... Or even that it was Fresh Prince. But I think at this point, Will Smith has been around for so long and done so much and displayed such a bevy of characters that he does not have one.
It's not Fresh Prince. A conversation that happens a lot with people in our industry about, you know, career path and all that is, but are you relevant to today's audience, right? You know, it's like we're 28, we're in the middle. You know, you talk to somebody who's, you know, 45, 55, and they're like, oh, such and such's most important role is this thing that came out in 1989, like that they remember really fondly. But it's like somebody who's 17 today has no idea what you're talking about. None. I mean, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is not relevant to today's audience. Like, they've just have no idea what's going on, you know, like just none.
Yeah.
if you even think about Men in Black, like, I honestly would say Men in Black 1, huge at its time. Men in Black 2, arbitrary sequel that came out, you know, 5 years later because it was supposed to and they've been working on it. Men in Black 3 is like that movie where I was like, I remember when that came out and I was just kind of like,
I couldn't believe this is still happening.
It's kind of like one of those things like Dumb and Dumber 2 where you're like, a studio's like, we'll make enough money off of this because there's an audience that gave a shit.
Right.
But it's like, it's a kid's movie with a star doing a gimmick that's aged so much and we're making the movie 15 years later. So like, who's going to see it? I loved this movie. As I said, I probably saw it 6 times in its day. And I like didn't even for a second consider seeing Men in Black 3. I don't even know that I've seen Men in Black 2, to be honest.
Yeah, I hardly remember it.
So, I mean, I don't think that this role for him is career defining. And Independence Day, it's not, because again, he's not even in the sequel. They didn't put him in the sequel.
I think Fresh Prince is really the only one you can really argue for. I think it's the only one that really stands out.
He's the best performance of Muhammad Ali in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's as close to career defining as these are. Like, it's different because it's not commercially remembered the same way. But in terms of relevance, if I'm looking at the whole career, I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, that's just as important. He's really good as Muhammad Ali. He does a great job. He's the perfect casting choice for that at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And he crushed it. He absolutely crushed it. It's a great film. And and the performance stands up even now.
Yeah. And then you go into the later part of his career and it's like, there's nothing in that era 04 forward that really stands out as like the franchise movie. I mean, this is the closest one, Men in Black.
Yeah,
and
so I think
don't think he has a career defining role.
Now, and even the chat, they're sitting there talking about like it's Fresh Prince, but again, you talk now, people that are 20 years old never saw Fresh Prince. 20 years ago, Fresh Prince just ended.
Yeah. 100%.
So how are you going to sit there and be like, it's the biggest role when half of the population today don't even know, have never even seen one episode of that show?
Ask me to explain to you a plot line from an episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
I could never do it because I couldn't even verify. It's like when people ask, like, Alex is a good buddy of ours.
Yeah,
he's a little older than ours. He goes, you remember that episode of Fresh Prince where, you know, him and Carl? No, I don't.
I remember the show.
I was 8 years old when it ended. I was 8 years old when a lot of things happened.
People love that show. People loved it. Like, I remember, like, lots of moments, lots of clips. The theme song I remember very well, but that's about it. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy. So I think the question there is, he does not have a career defining role. Josh Ryan Sports, thank you so much.
Always,
for
man.
Submitting
thank
that.
You so much.
And quickly, as a little Easter egg, we're gonna throw in there before we get into the categories, the top 5 Will Smith character pairs in his career. We're just gonna list them down. 5 to 1 is a conversation Drew and I were having about his co-stars, and because Will Smith is kind of a gimmick, who he pairs with and
that
what
makes
is relevant.
It so great, yeah. You know what? I literally need to take a break right now.
Really?
I'm going, yes. So I'm gonna let you sit here and introduce the categories and talk about it.
Okay,
I'm gonna
sounds
do it.
Good.
I'm gonna do it. You're on your own for
okay.
1 minute.
Bye, guys. Excellent. Guys, I'm going to talk to you right now about this this top 5 in an unprecedented moment. In an unprecedented moment, Andrew Guy has taken a break. I hope he's okay, guys. I hope he's okay. So the roles in question that we're talking about are, he's paired with Jeff Goldblum in Independence Day. He is paired with Kevin James in Hitch. He's paired with Tommy Lee Jones in Men in Black. He pairs with the dog in I Am Legend, Charlize Theron in I Am Legend,
Hancock.
No, sorry, what did I just say? I Am Legend.
I Am Legend.
That's the dog. That's the dog. Yeah, Charlize Theron's Hancock. And then, am I forgetting? Oh, I said Goldblum. And Martin Lawrence in Bad Boys. Those are the major, major roles. So I think Drew and I agreed that the number one pairing of all time for him was Tommy Lee Jones. I think that this is his best pairing. Tommy Lee Jones is the best. Number 2 is Jeff Goldblum in Independence Day. I think that's a pretty solid number 2. We kind of both agreed. Kevin James in Hitch is maybe our third favorite. We both really, really, really like Kevin James. That movie's great. I think it kind of speaks to a different part of Will Smith's career. He's still gimmicky. He's still, like, fun. But he's not the same kind of gimmicky, fun, now obnoxious thing that he was doing in the 90s. So I think that I'm going to go with Kevin James for number 3. I would go the dog in I Am Legend is solid. So is Charlize. But, and then you got Hackman in Enemy of the State, too. I'm going to go the dog in I Am Legend. I think the fact that he does a whole movie basically by himself with a dog, and he has that incredible scene at the end of the movie when he has to kill the dog. The dog is infected, and he's trying to save the dog, and it's like it's been his companion. It's basically his Wilson from Castaway. It's awesome. It's really sad, actually, when he has to kill the dog. It really makes me sad. But I think the dog is a great companion for him in the fourth one on our list. And I'm going to throw in... I know the popular choice here would be Martin Lawrence in Bad Boys. I mean, I know that. I know that would be the one. But I don't really like Bad Boys. Neither of us really like Bad Boys. We think it's aged badly. Like, it's aged badly. No pun intended there. And I think Charlize in that movie is fine. And I really do think that, you know, Hackman, Enemy of the State, is okay. But even though he's just okay in that movie, I think I'm still going to go Hackman in Enemy of the State.
All right, I'm back.
He's back.
Oh, thank God. All right, where are we at?
So the list that I put together here was Tommy Lee Jones 1.
Yep.
Goldblum 2. Kevin James 3. The Dog 4.
Oh, definitely.
Gene Hackman 5. We eliminated Martin Lawrence because we're not fans of that movie.
Yes.
And Charlize Theron got kicked off the list.
Because you haven't seen Hancock.
Yes.
And because it's not as good as these. The things that's so great about those first two of TLJ and Goldblum is that
I've never heard anyone tell me that Charlize Theron in that movie is memorable. Not a single time ever.
Neither have I, and she's one of my favorite actresses of all time.
Ever.
Those two guys do such a great job, TLJ and Goldblum, of balancing out Will Smith's kind of craziness and his zaniness to making it like super enjoyable. Kevin James and Will Smith are just a great odd couple.
That movie's really good.
It's a really good movie. It's actually a really good, funny, great rom-com.
Did I ever tell you, so the video store by my dad's house when I was growing up, and stop me if I've told the story because I think I may have.
Just tell it.
I used to go in there and I would get like free movies. I made friends with all the guys that worked there. I'd hang out there. And so I'd take home like 5 DVDs on weeknights. My dad would be off doing his thing and I would just like order a pizza and watch like 4 movies. And I just remember like they took The Sign where it's like Will Smith. Remember he's leaning over the title, Hitch?
Oh, yeah.
That's the front of the box. And they photoshopped it so it said Will Smith is a bitch. And they changed the H to a B.
At the video store.
And they had a sign up that said that. And it was the funniest thing, and I thought it was great. But I really like Hitch. I think that movie's funny.
I can't believe they wrote... Back then, people love Will Smith.
It's like an indie video store.
The dog, of course, is like, you gotta do a dog.
It's for the quality that he manages to actually, like, entertain by himself, and that's why I think it's
exactly. Wrong. It's the exact same conversation you have with Castaway.
Yeah.
Wilson and Tom Hanks are an incredible duo.
It's hard to do.
It really is. And then last but not least, of course, Hackman, because we didn't get to do Enemy of the State, and we love Gene Hackman on this show.
You know, I think we'll, as a separate question to the pitch here, we're going to put up, do you guys want to see us do Enemy of the State on the show? That's a question.
It's a good question. Yeah.
Do you like action? Is that something you would want to see us do?
And we're how many ask? Movies have we done that have been put up? There's The Hunted.
Yep.
There is Enemy of the State. There's got to be another couple movies that we've like put up a couple times that have never gotten
that have
voted
always
on.
Lost the vote.
Does that mean we shouldn't do them?
Probably. It's our audience who's doing
that's
it.
That's so. Fair. All right. Fair.
It's a fair point.
Scrap that idea.
Guys, so we're going to get into the categories here. There are 3 action movie categories. There's Totally Ridiculous, Totally Legitimate, Ridiculously Legitimate. So Totally Legitimate are movies like The Fugitive. Mm-hmm. We like to say Terminator T2, 2, yep. Lone Survivor, and movies that are totally ridiculous like Face Off, Con Air.
The Rock.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you said Totally Ridiculous. Yeah. Excuse me. Speed.
No, that's the middle category again.
Yep. Shit.
Andrew went and urinated his brains.
I went and did drugs. Is actually what I did.
The middle category are ridiculously legitimate. Predator, Speed, movies like that. They kind of have they're grounded by a great performance. They, so on and so forth. So,
damn it.
Where does this movie rank for you? Yeah, Men in Black.
I think I have to go for the middle category of ridiculously legitimate. And I think that with TLJ grounding Will Smith in reality, I think with him taking it so seriously, him and D'Onofrio, there's not many moments of this where I'm kind of just like, oh, God, here we go.
I'm going to go ahead and say this is totally ridiculous.
I thought you would.
And it's pretty close. It's pretty close. And it's actually funny. I think you could make an argument for this movie for each category. I think you could actually make an argument this movie's totally legitimate also.
Yeah, because it doesn't ever break the norm of the world that it sets up.
Yeah, you don't laugh unintentionally. And at its time, it's just aged badly. So I think I think like you could make the argument for each, but I'm going to go way in the other direction and say this movie's totally ridiculous.
That is such a good point.
And the reason I say it is just because I think it has aged badly. We're viewing it by today's standards. We're not looking at it in 1997. The whole concept is kind of absurd. Like, the idea of taking any part of this seriously is absurd. It's close. It doesn't have one performance in it that I'm like... Like, even though TLJ and D'Onofrio do ground it...
Right.
It doesn't have one that I find myself thinking about and referencing all the time. It's like, oh my god, that person was just unbelievable.
Fair.
Like, you know, it doesn't have some quality like that. So I think it's just totally ridiculous. It's just not...
Jonas Tiger says we have to do Enemy of the State or he's boycotting our show.
Ooh. Okay, Jonas Tiger.
You shouldn't do that. We love you.
Jonas Tiger, in the chat, just curious. Honest answer. We've done 81 episodes on the show. How many episodes have you watched? Be real with us. You watched 81 episodes?
I bet it's been a good amount. He's been around for a while.
He's been around for a long time.
Yeah, man, I think I have to go ridiculously legitimate because of all the points you just made, other than the fact that it's aged poorly, which... It has, but I don't think it's aged as poorly as it could have.
No, definitely.
I think Independence Day aged terribly.
Bulletproof.
And maybe if you did Enemy of the State, and it's a great movie, and it doesn't age at all, but this movie ages just enough to where I'm kind of like, God damn it, Will Smith, a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm never taken out of it. I loved it the whole time. I think I was more on board than you were in the beginning, and I was kind of surprised by that, and I never kind of came out of it. So I think I have to say this movie is ridiculously legitimate because I never laugh when I'm not supposed to. Will Smith has aged poorly a little bit, but TLJ and Vincent D'Onofrio make this an actual great film.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough, guys. We're going to get into the last category of the show, and that is something we like to call the pish. Nice. I may have watched 75 of AMA, says Star Drew.
Wow. That's, I love you guys.
Star Drew, 75 episodes?
That's amazing.
Unreal.
That's amazing.
That's like probably with the extra minutes that go on each episode, that's probably nearly 100 hours. My mind is blown.
It's true. We've been seeing these names for a long time. Stardew, Jonas, Hurst, Rangers fan, you know, Josh. I mean, I don't even want to start that because I'm going to leave someone out. They're going to feel left out. We recognize the names every single week on Instagram, on Twitter, on our live chat, and we love it, and we appreciate you guys very, very much.
Definitely. So what are we pitching?
I don't know, man. What do we pitch? I mean, I guess we do another poll unless there's something...
Let's do a three-option poll. All
okay.
Right? I'm going to throw out a couple here. All right? Just movies that come to mind.
Okay.
Number one, Blade 1.
I just like Blade 2 so much more.
We can't do Blade 2 without doing Blade 1. Okay. You just can't do it.
Okay, so we got...
It's a ridiculous thing.
We got Blade.
I randomly say, damn him, damn that man.
Damn him.
Watch
damn
all him. 81 episodes of Rangers Fan 1996.
Wow.
All right. Blade is option one. Option number two... Let's just say The Raid Redemption.
Oh, God, yes. The Raid Redemption, guys, is one of my favorite movies of all time, and it is so badass.
I want one option more, and okay. I want it to be like something...
Like
something,
classic?
Yeah, like something that we really feel like 82 now. I love it. I want it to be like one thing that we've maybe talked about, and we haven't gotten around to. Something
right, like a heat type one, but not
something that's like really, really special. And by the way, guys, we have to sort this out, but we may be off air for 2 weeks.
We might. I mean,
because the studio Popcorn Talk goes on hiatus on Friday.
This Friday. So 100%. Because I leave Wednesday afternoon next week.
Oh, got it. Yeah, we're on hiatus. We're on hiatus for 2 weeks. Yeah, we are on hiatus. Should we put Blade Rangers 1, fan. Blade 2 in the Raid Redemption?
Yes!
Yeah?
Yes, please God, can we do Blade 1, Blade 2? Yes! This is the greatest poll of all time. All right, guys, so for the pitch this week, we're pitching three movies. It's Blade 1, Blade 2, and the Raid Redemption. I cannot lose in this scenario. I'm very excited. But that being said, are we not going to be back till...
I don't think we're going to be back till 2017.
To the new year, because the 21st is next Wednesday. 28th is one after that.
Yeah.
We're hiatus next week. I don't get back in town until nighttime the 28th. We're gone for 2 weeks, guys.
2 weeks off.
No.
I know.
We're bummed too, man.
We have a cool thing we're announcing for the new year, though, that's going to be a little extra. We're going to be doing a little extra stuff. So.
Yeah, I know Ben and I have talked about extras a lot over the last couple of years, or 82 episodes, if you will, but... This is exciting. This is like a real big one.
This will be a big thing, and it'll be cool to let you guys know what we're doing. So the handful of you that have watched those number of episodes and are totally committed will have a chance to get involved and have us, you know, do stuff you want to hear, because we're excited about it.
You'll be our bosses at that point.
If you guys want to follow along and tweet at us in the break, if you have any thoughts, movies we should do, just things about the episodes we've done, please follow along. You can find the podcast at AMA Podcast. My name is Ben Bateman. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram.
And my name is Andrew Guy, and you can find me at Andrew Guy on Instagram and Twitter as well.
And guys, have a great holiday. Have a great Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, the whole deal. Marissa Serafini in the booth, thank you so much.
Of course.
For a great 2016. You've been amazing. We'll see you guys in 2017.
We'll see you next year. Happy Festivus, guys. Take care.
Bye, guys.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
Views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.